AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Despots, dictators, strongmen. We're dealing with them here in the 21st century, and I welcome Cliff May, the founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing about despots at the Washington Times, his column, and what is to be done. Cliff and I are very well versed in the ways of Winston Churchill and his colleagues dealing with the dictator in the 1930s and 40s in Berlin. And the quote from Winston Churchill that applies here in these extreme circumstances. This is before he was prime minister, addressing his PM, Neville Chamberlain, who was twisting himself into different versions of peace now, peace forever, to the dictator. Churchill said to the PM, you were given the choice between war and dishonor. You chose dishonor, and you will have war. That remark, of course, came to the catastrophe of the Second War and then the Cold War. Cliff, a very good evening to you. What have we learned since Churchill about dealing with despots? What have we learned in these years of watching the Biden administration accommodate Mr. Khomeini in the Middle East and use the term seeking an off-ramp with Mr. Putin? Good evening to you, Cliff.
Good evening to you. Yeah, we've not learned enough, I fear. Chamberlain believed, and I understand, you can understand this, that, look, Hitler surely would prefer peace to war. Hitler surely will think in terms of compromise diplomatic solutions. Hitler surely weighs costs and benefits. If we give him Sudetenland, if we let him have maybe Czechoslovakia, he'll be satisfied, surely. Now, we have this view, I think, still today, and I fear this administration and many on the right and left have it, that however despotic and dictatorial some of these people, Putin, Xi Jinping, Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader, so-called, of Iran, or Kim Jong-un, dynastic dictator of North Korea, they're probably not so different from us. H.R. McMaster would call this view strategic narcissism. Some would call it mirror imaging. That, again, they're open to costs and benefits, compromise, prefer peace to war. But we don't see it at all. We don't see it in recent experience. So I talk about it in my column, for example, President Trump went to Kim Jong-un and he said, look, if you'll just kind of moderate your policies a little bit, not scare us with nuclear weapons and tests, not threaten the South and Japan, I'm going to give you, here's a quote, prosperity like you have never seen. You're going to be the hero of your people. And by the way, he also communicated that if Kim declined the offer, American missiles might be raining on his head. Now, if this had been you and me, we'd say, well, it's a pretty good carrot. It's a pretty big stick the Americans wield. So maybe I should consider it. But Kim didn't, because Kim is not like you and me. And Putin is neither. We keep talking about him wanting an off-ramp. He has given no indication whatsoever that he's interested in an off-ramp. None. If Macron came to him, just imagine this, right? Emmanuel Macron, president of France, and said, hey, I'm going to give you an off-ramp. I think he'd say, mon ami, I'm not interested in an off-ramp. Now, if you're interested in an off-ramp, I'll give you one. And here's where it begins. You and the Americans stop giving bullets and guns and other weapons to Volodymyr Zelensky, that Nazi Jew. And you let me finish my special military operations in Ukraine, which is a rogue province of Russia. That's your off-ramp. Do you take it? Because if you do, that's good. That's the beginning of our negotiations, because I have some grievances against NATO as well, and I want that to be part of the equation. That's where we are right now.
And Mr. Khomeini in Iran, the JCPOA, updated, as I understand it, more and more cash is pushed across. outfits and undermining the governments in the region. What has that led to for the administration? What have they learned from the fact that Mr. Khamenei still says no?
Exactly. And I'm not sure they've learned anything. And what they should have learned, what they should understand, is that although they've offered a watered down agreement and about $1 trillion in funds that Khamenei can use to build better missiles, for supporting the Houthis in Yemen, for supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon, for supporting Assad in Syria, for variously undermining Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain. Despite all that, Khamenei is saying, I'm not sure I want to go into this deal. He's still, you know, the parliament is still chanting death to America every Friday night. That is not just a slogan. It is the goal of the revolution to which Khamenei has dedicated his life. And it is the reason why he is right now murdering, torturing, and imprisoning Iranian women and men who stand with him, who have had quite enough of his soul-crushing interpretation of Islamic law. So why won't Khamenei take this deal, which is unbelievably good for him, which does not seriously impede his nuclear weapons program and gives him all the money? One is he may think, I can still get a better deal because I don't think the Americans have finished backing down. I just have to keep pushing. But the other possibility, which I talk about, is he doesn't want to even seem to be agreeing with Americans, satanic Americans, on anything whatsoever, because, and this gets back to my theme, he's not like us, and he wouldn't want anyone to think he is.
And Xi Jinping, about to be elevated to be, again, General Secretary, perhaps this time chairman for life. There's no easy indication there'll be a successor while he's with us on Earth. What are we learning about his provocations in Taiwan? Is that success for him to keep throwing his weapons of war around the people of Taiwan?
Yes, because what he is, he's not a democratizer, he's not a reformer. The theory we had, the strategy we had, and this was a bipartisan theory, that as the if we helped make China rich, China leaders would become more liberal, more moderate. They'd see themselves as good stakeholders in the American-led international order. All that was nonsense. He intends to build his empire. It's already an empire. Part of it includes, for example, Eastern Turkestan, better known as Xinjiang, where he is persecuting to the point of genocide, not my word, the word of the American government, the word of several European governments, the Uyghurs, a Turkic Muslim people. He has all colonized Tibet, a separate, very separate country, but part of his empire. He has broken his treaty obligations in regard to Hong Kong. Hong Kong was promised it would have certain freedoms that it had gotten used to under British rule. Those have been taken away. There's been really no punishment for that. And he wants Taiwan. Now, he says it's a reunification, but the people of Taiwan have never been under communist rule, don't want to be under communist rule. Taiwan, as you know, has been under Portuguese rule, it's been under Japanese rule, it's been under a lot of things. It doesn't want to give up the ability to vote for candidates from different parties and simply accept communist rule from Beijing. But that's what he wants. And of course, part of what he's doing is watching what Putin is trying to do to Ukraine, which is exterminated as a separate nation, and see how that's going. I think he's probably not pleased that it's as difficult as it is. I'm sure Putin said, hey, this will be about a 3-day effort. Maybe it'll take a few weeks, but no more than that. And of course, it's not going that well. But it's not over yet. Putin hasn't lost yet. And again, I think Putin is waiting for the Americans and the Europeans to say, okay, what do we have to do? What do we have to give you? And then he will say, I think, as Khamenei has, well, I've got a long list that you'll have to agree to if you want me to stop. And that doesn't mean he'll stop, because once he finishes with Ukraine, if he is able, he will, I think, look towards Lithuania in particular, also Estonia, also Latvia, also Poland. The Poles are, of course, very worried about his longer-term ambitions here. So NATO is very much at risk. And, of course, Putin would see that as a wonderful achievement if he could shatter NATO. So far, he hasn't achieved that. On the contrary, but I think one of his demands would be, by the way, Finland and Sweden, they're not joining NATO. You understand me? Not if you want an off-ramp. That's part of it.
You were given the choice between war and dishonor. You chose dishonor, and you will have war. Cliff May for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batchelor.